Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
Le drop de Jonathan Sexton! Oh, ils sont foutus! Il passe! C'est terrible! Terrible! Il est là! Jonathan Sexton!
Oh, we're looking for another one. It's Canning once again firing it in from near the sideline. It's a miracle shot! It's gone over the bar!
This is beyond cruelty. This is sadism at its worst. It is beyond belief. That a team that gives so much that those fellas give today are on the wrong side of that result.
And fighting is there! Robbie Brady brings us all to our feet in Rio.
Mick, forget about what I said last week. Forget about the week before. I'm sure of it now. This is the biggest weekend in the sporting calendar so far this year.
How so?
Well, we've got to be talking to Kevin Doyle, our latest newest Ladbrokes ambassador, about the return of the Premier League. We all love the international break. It's been a brilliant one for Ireland. But there's a bit, a lot more excitement about when you're looking forward to a weekend of club football and it's back again.
Okay. Right? But I don't know if the Premier League coming back signifies the biggest weekend of the year. But
yeah, hold on. I'm only starting off.
Okay.
We're going to have Jason Quigley back on again. He's going to get us hyped about Tyson Fury versus Otto Wallen, which is, you know, you think your sporting day is over on a Saturday night, but when you've got a good boxing fight, it just extends it those extra few hours.
Yeah.
We've got the NFL in full swing. I'm sure you're very excited. You know, we know a little bit about how the teams are shaping up after the opening weekend. Sorry to tell the Miami Dolphin fans out there. And not only that, but we've got four All-Ireland finals to look forward to this weekend. You've got the Dublin-Kerry All-Ireland final replay on Saturday, and then you've got three ladies finals on Sunday.
Yeah, that's pretty big, Mark, I have to say. I've kind of got Rugby World Cup in my head, so because it's the kind of in-between week, I immediately sort of downgraded this weekend. But now that you've sold it to me, I'm more excited about the fact that we're going to have Kevin Doyle on board along with Stephen Ferris and Jason Quigley as our kind of regular guests on this show. Kevin Doyle on football, not bad. Like, I mean, we had Sean Meehan in, and look, I mean, Sean will continue to be part of the show, but I mean, he's got zero Irish international caps and Kevin Doyle has loads of them.
He's got a few. Got a couple of goals as well. We were actually down on Friday. We were at the launch of a partnership with Ladbrokes, and we got to chat to Kevin. We got to chat to Stephen and Jason together. It was interesting to chat to the boys in person. We asked all of them individually who were their ideal dinner guests.
Yeah.
A lot of love out there for Tiger Woods. One of them also said Shakira. I'm not at liberty to say which one of them at the moment, but it was interesting to chat to the boys.
I'd say Shakira would be a good dinner guest, though. Who would you have as your three, by the way? Because I was there while you were asking them these questions, and they didn't know it was coming up. And I was amazed at all three, and this is why they're such good guests on the show when we speak to them every week. We're able to just roll with it and actually give you pretty good answers, because I wouldn't have a clue who I'd want as my ideal dinner guest.
I think I'd want Tommy Tiernan.
Tommy Tiernan was one of the answers, actually, wasn't it? Yeah.
Tommy Tiernan. One of the lads said Kevin Bridges as well would be interesting. I feel you don't want too many.
You can't
many...
just have comedians, though.
I was about to say, I think that you don't want too many comedians, or else they're all going to be shouting over each other. Like, I was thinking getting Broly in as well, but Broly not had anyone get a word in. We'll say Tommy Tiernan. I don't know. Come back to me.
How about
each week? How about I suggest
Kevin Doyle, Stephen Ferris,
and
Jason Jordan. Quigley.
Yeah. Where we're saying, get the three of them there. Go, lads, one of these are going to have to leave because Tommy's here as well. But anyway, let's get to the show. We've got an absolutely packed show. We're going to be chatting to Jason. We're going to be chatting to Kevin. We'll be looking back over our 1-2-3 from last weekend from the international games and picking our 1-2-3 picks for this weekend. We'll also have our big shout. We'll be chatting about the NFL. You've got a few NFL picks for this weekend as well, Mick.
I do, and I'll be doing them every week. And look, I don't have the greatest record of it, but Jesus, I love picking them.
And Lawrence Brosnan will be in studio to preview the replay of the All-Ireland final.
God,
and of
I can't
course,
wait
the ladies
for the All-Ireland. Yeah, both of them, actually. Yeah.
I'm very, very excited. And I'm sure Morris is going to have us even more excited afterwards. But first of all, before we look forward, we must look back.
Mark, I'm in good form for this one this week, right? Because last week I just, you know, we weren't... Do you know what? We actually had a couple of picks that came true last week, but I didn't feel like we were adamant about them. We only cared about one thing and one thing only on last week's show, and that was we absolutely knew for a fact that Ireland were going to draw with Switzerland. We had a hint of a nil-all, a 5-1, that didn't come true, but myself and Sean in particular were absolutely adamant. The score would be 1-1. We had that 24-5 we got for that, a really decent decent bet on Ladbrokes. That's a win. That's setting us up for the whole year. Like, you know what I mean? That was class. And then I also got a one of the Ladbrokes hashtag get a price 11-8 wins, which was Ireland to win or draw and Switzerland to score, not to score in the first half and to score less than four overall, which I think was
I remember that, a pretty big win.
As well. So, like, you know, we nailed it. I think the only thing we missed out on was, as I said, that nil-all draw and Shane Duffy at 14-1 as the last goal scorer, but sure, that was a medium shout anyway, like not quite a big shout.
It was also brilliant because there was such a hype around that last free kick, and the camera and the commentary team were only interested in Shane Duffy. It was like, there's 22 players on the pitch here, but this is going on Shane Duffy's head. And I was sitting back going, look, at either way, we're dead right. We either got a one-all draw or Shane Duffy's going to put this in the net. And he almost got to it. He got obviously flagged for offside, but he had his head under the goalkeeper just as the ball was coming in.
I'm not going to get into the fact that Ireland were offside from Highline free kicks three times in the second half, because I don't understand it, but I'm not getting into it, Mark. I already told you that. We also had another winner in the All-Ireland Camogie final. Galway put in the absolutely brilliant performance against Kilkenny. It was really, really impressive. We kind of called it, you know, and they were 7-4. Kilkenny were 4-7. We like Galway. We went for it. We were paid off. The only thing that let us down really last week was the rugby. We had Wales +6. I think Stephen definitely thought that Ireland were going to win the game. He actually said that his most likely result was Ireland by 6, a handicap draw. And unfortunately, they won by 9. I think he had the game pretty much figured out, but you know, the scoreline just kind of let him down a little bit. So, unlucky there. My big shout last week of a 25-1 draw in that game. Not as on the money, I would say. But it was a big shout. We'll have another one of them later. We're still to win it. Two cakes in a sports biography for a listener or for us. Still to be won. Guaranteed we're going to do it by the end of the season. I promise. And after that, just our 1-2-3s, really, because we had a lot of kind of, we had less picks last week than normal because we had a lot of kind of season-long NFL ones in our Get Hype section. But we also did have, myself and Sean both had 4-0 to England in Bulgaria. So we get another point on the board in the 1-2-3 battle. You got, you know, 2 weeks in a row now. I've had 4 weeks in a row with 1 out of 3. You have...
I'm up to two.
You're up to two because you had Wales to beat Belarus 1-0. I was a little bit let down in that. It was unfortunate. I thought I was going to be in. It was at one stage, Wales were winning 1-0. Belgium were winning 1-0. I had 2-0 in both games. And I was getting super excited because England had already won 4-0 at that stage. I was messaging you. You weren't even replying. I don't think you even seen the messages. And I was just like frantically going, oh God, I think it's happened. And I was like, oh no, Belgium have scored it's the second too early. And by the time I came out of that message, they'd already made it 3-0 and the dream was over. However, I will say about the, you get a €1 free bet if you pick, if you get one of the three right. And I have done that 4 weeks in a row. I used my €1 free bet this week for an 11-team international accumulator.
How did that get on?
It came off.
What?
I swear to God. I won, it's like €13, that's all. It's, do you know what, as always with all of these things, we're doing it for the fun, we're gambling responsibly, as we would like you all to do. It was literally a €1 free bet, and I couldn't have been happier if that was €10,000, because 11-team accumulator came off.
It makes international break so interesting as well.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you, here's the most interesting thing about it. The reason, I did it all based on the fact that Ireland and Switzerland was going to be a draw, so that was the only thing of any, everything else looked a banker. Okay, the last game it came down to was Turkey and Andorra. Turkey at home to Andorra. You don't think too much of that. Turkey are going to win the game. I had already seen that I'd won the bet before I checked what happened in that game. And thank God, because Turkey got the winner after 89 minutes. A 1-0 win. I would have collapsed. But that's what you got. These free bets, lads, you know.
Yep. Look, we'll be picking our 1-2 free picks for this weekend later on as well, hoping to get off the board. If it's your first time hearing about 1-2-3, it's a free game you can play on ladbrokes.com, where they will ask you, they'll task you with correctly predicting the score of three of this weekend's matches. If you get one right, you get a €1 free bet, as Mick did. You can then turn that into the €13 you did.
And I have another one to play with this week. I have to think about it now, from England and Bulgaria.
If you get two, you win a €5 free bet. And if you get all three right, you win €100 cash. But we'll be chatting about that a bit later on. As we mentioned, with all these bets, looking back at it, looking back at our odds and predictions, it's all just a bit of crack. We're only having a bit of fun, as Mick said. If you are placing any bets, please do bet responsibly, and you can visit dunluie.net for further information. Up next, we're going to be chatting to Kevin Doyle about the weekend's Premier League action. Now, he's under a lot of pressure because The other Ladbrokes ambassadors we've been speaking to, Stephen Ferris and Jason Quigley, both of them nailed the predictions. They're on their first time on the show, literally their very first week. This is Kevin's first week. He's going to be talking about the Premier League weekend in general, but he's also put together a treble for us. So I'm interested to see what he's got to say, Mick, and if this actually comes off.
A treble, like, you know, no pressure just to pull off a treble. Like, we were asking Stephen, like, a handicap bet or something like that. So yeah, a little
Jason,
bit better off.
Jason somehow predicted that Lomachenko would beat Luke Campbell. But let's see what
over
Kevin,
the distance, give him some credit.
Let's see what Kevin's come up with. Let's get him on the phone. Delighted to be joined by Kevin Doyle on the show now. Kevin, we'll get to chatting about Premier League in just a second, but you were obviously in the Viva last night. It's been a good week for Irish football all in all, given the senior performances and also the under-21 wins.
Yeah, positive all around. I've been at both the senior games in the last week. Obviously the main one, the Swiss game, I was really impressed with that performance. I spoke to you about it already, but just the whole attitude to the game. The atmosphere in the stadium was excellent, but the way Mick had them set up to sort of, you know, be a little bit gung-ho and try to create a few chances and not just, as I said before, to sit back and accept a draw. Again, last night, you know, it was a totally different occasion, totally different atmosphere, but it served a purpose. You know, never massive fan those games. I didn't enjoy playing in them, but it was very good for the lads who get their first caps and for the guys to get their first goals for them as well, three guys in their first goals for them. So, listen, I'll give them a big boost. So Mick will be delighted. He seemed too happy in his interview afterwards.
He never does. So,
yeah, I'm sure he's delighted. And again, the 21 away to Sweden, really impressive. Troy Park getting a couple of goals to add to the aura around himself and increase the clamour to get him involved in the senior squad.
It's funny you say about not enjoying those games, Kevin, because I was like watching last night and, you know, you're looking at like a really disappointing crowd and, you know, looking at the team even, you're kind of like, right, there's a lot of new faces, but none of these guys are going to play with each other when they kind of come into like the first team. But that's normally how I'd feel. And there's normally, like in the last few years, there's almost been a kind of a depressing feel to them at the Aviva. But that was never the sense last night. It kind of felt like there was something kind of exciting and something new on the horizon.
It was decent play. We had, like, they're sort of false. Like, we had lots of possession and it was very easy. And, you know, Bulgaria for a friendly game came. They're so desperate to get, they've lost so many games in a row and their new manager lost his first 3 games. So they were putting, like, everyone behind the ball and dropping so deep. It was very unrealistic. But, listen, it serves a purpose. It gives that a chance to play. I didn't like them. I didn't mind them if the manager left five or six of the players who would have played the first game, say, and left the senior players who would play. And it's easy. It feels more of a big deal then when you're you know, getting your first cap or two, that you're in among the lads who are in the team every week. When it's 11 lads changed, it just makes it a bit false to me. I didn't enjoy that. But it's hard to get it right. You know, you have to give these people, you have to give lads a chance. And every one of them, I think, you know, didn't look out of place. They all played well. It was a poor Bulgarian team, but I think, listen, they did what they couldn't do anything else last night than play the way they played. I think it was, you know, as good a result as we could have expected, as good a performance as we could have expected given all those changes and the way it was going to be. And they all did themselves justice. A couple in particular, you know, I thought Jack Byrne was excellent when he came on. We spent a lot of the game going wide and trying to get across in the box. Without ever trying to, you know, maybe take him apart through the middle if you penetrate past him. He actually did that when he came on, and might give Mick something to think about regarding putting him in the 23 the next day instead of being the one in the stand. So I don't think any of those, what they did last night, will get themselves into the team. I don't think that was the exercise. I think Mick is very, not that it shouldn't, but I just think the way Mick is, he will stick with the lads who've gotten the result against Switzerland as much as he can. You know, the lads last night was more, you know, can I trust them to bring them on, or can I trust them if someone's injured? You know, what would they show me last night? And I think they all did enough to keep themselves in mixed plans.
Looking ahead to this weekend, at first glance, the Premier League fixtures, there doesn't look like, you know, there isn't one of them big standard ties that we've had for the last few weeks. Yeah. But when you look beneath the surface, you look at this race for possibly that fourth place, maybe even third and fourth place. Man United against Leicester and Wolves against Chelsea. It's a big weekend for those teams. Obviously, you have a close eye on Wolves. What have you made of their start of the season? They're probably, in one way, it's positive for them that United and Chelsea haven't been pulling up any trees, really. But in another way, they haven't really kicked on as much as you would have expected them to be from last season.
No, it has been a great, you know, I suppose it's so early, like, to be talking. You don't want to be, you know, I don't like to be discussing form and that side of it so early on. Well, how they finish, and I tipped them, again, I spoke to you, I tipped them to be my sort of dark horse. So they need to get going. And it sort of shows where Chelsea are as well, where you look at Wolves v Chelsea, you know, obviously every year gone by in the last 10 years, you'd be just saying Chelsea. But you think, you know what, you'd expect Wolves maybe to get something from this game. Shows the difference in the two clubs, Chelsea in transition and Wolves really on the up, apart from a little bit of a slow start, but I think they will start to kick on. They've got a good manager, and speaking to people who know there, he's doing a great job, and they've got some excellent players. You know, they can be, I'm not saying Wolves will be a top four or be that team that might sneak in, but you know, I think they were eight last year. Can they get to fifth, sixth? You never know. Chelsea, I think Frank Lampard will be happy enough.
Yeah, it's hard to know.
Apart from the first game, you know, losing 4-0 to Man United, not a great way to start. But since then, he's settled it, and he's got a win under his belt. He's brought in some younger players. He doesn't seem to have the pressure on him. We don't know, obviously, but from the outside, it doesn't seem to have the pressure on that previous Chelsea managers have had straight away. It looks like he's going to be given a bit of time to maybe bring in a bit of youth and do it a little bit differently. So, but still be under pressure to win away at Wolves, and he'll be wanting to keep them in the fight for that fourth position. But he seems to have got them going a little bit better, and obviously than the Man United game at the start of the season.
Yeah, speaking of Man United, this is like, it's probably one of those fixtures that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer does not want after the last couple of weeks going in against Leicester City. Leicester City have suddenly become that team that everybody's raving about and going, geez, this Leicester team could be dark horses to get into that top six. And I don't think they're too dark.
No, they've won the league a few years ago. So, that again shows where they are. Man United at home to Leicester, right? Listen, we wouldn't even be discussing it, and until maybe this year and last year. You'd fancy Leicester going there, you know. And we're doing a tip thing at the end here, and I'm going to tip a draw. You see that first game, and Solskjaer was all on the summer, but he wanted his pre-season. They weren't fit enough, was the sort of talk coming out of Man United last season. He needed his own pre-season, and see that first game against Chelsea, he's got them going, but it hasn't been great since then. Crystal Palace at home was the one. You know, listen, they draw away to Wolves in their second game. That's not too bad. Yeah, you're happy enough with that. Everyone's going to struggle there a little bit, and then they lose to Crystal Palace at home. You're thinking, here we go again. It's just going to be another one this season, like it's been the last few years. Drawing away to Southampton, not the end of the world, but still, I think he would have expected a better start. And then you get the international break and he doesn't see his players, and they all come back yesterday, I suppose, and now he's got to face Leicester, who are full of confidence and flying it so far.
Karen, I'm just looking at like the start that Man City and Liverpool have made, and like I was thinking about Norwich and Newcastle having to go and sort of face Norwich playing City, hosting them, and Newcastle and Liverpool this weekend. And just thinking, like, I was even thinking of, like, you know, when you guys got promoted at Reading, I remember, like, really early in the season, you scoring against Man United, and they would have obviously been the class of the division then. And, you know, there was always a sense that you could go and, you know, you could go and beat one of these teams or go and get a result at them anyway. And I'm just thinking, it's like, it just feels futile. Like, what's it like for a player in Norwich this week saying, oh, here comes City, you know?
Yeah, I know. You know what? I was always, my mindset, I was lucky. I always felt we could get something against these teams. The only team that I always struggled against and to never got anything against over the years and always felt going into it, beat before we played them, was Arsenal, especially at Arsenal. They always, you know, his first playing against used to be Thierry Henry, and it just seemed to be like they were on a different planet. They weren't even winning the league. Chelsea were winning the league at the time. But you felt you could get something against Chelsea, and we did. But Arsenal just seemed to be able to just totally take the piss out of us, to be honest. You felt inferior on the pitch, and it's the only time I really felt inferior was playing against Arsenal. And I would imagine playing against Man City now,
is something similar. You know, and it's very tough for Norwich. If you had, especially their way, if they hadn't got the international break, they'd have been able to work, you know, with their team all week and get a really good shape and a plan. But they're coming back today. Most of them will be training for the first time today. It's so difficult to, you know, to get something in, get them into a shape and a way you want to play in the space of a day or two when you have to play Man City the weekend. It's, you know, I wouldn't say they're defeated before they go out, but it's, I would say it's the one team in the league. You know, I wouldn't, you know, I'd feel against Liverpool we could get something. But yeah, Man City, I'd just be a bit like I felt against Arsenal when all those years ago. It's just a nightmare. And they're just so good. They're so good at making you feel like a little kid. They're like piggy in the middle playing the ball around you. And that is how I used to feel against Arsenal back in the day. And I would imagine playing Man City now is something similar. And there's nothing you can really do about it. You have to accept that. Sometimes you just have to accept that you put everyone behind the ball and you hope for the best. And, you know, it's very unlikely the best is going to happen, but it's football, and you just hope that you have a fantastic day, and they have their odd off day, and you might need something. But it's very hard to make yourself believe that.
Speaking of Arsenal, and this race as well for that fourth place, like we were talking about, this game against Watford has suddenly become a lot more interesting as well, given that Javi Gracia has been ousted, and they've got Kiko Sanchez. But I was about to say that this is supposed to be strange for Watford players, but at this stage they're well used to it.
That's it doesn't seem to affect them. You know, every time they sack a manager, they seem to get a great bounce off it and go, you know, flying again. You know, you expect Arsenal to go there and win, but I don't know. Watford continually surprise me. I mean, they surprise everyone, the signings they make and how they play, and the last 2 years, I felt this could be the year where, you know, last year I felt it could be the year where it doesn't work out for him. And this year I feel that again, but I wouldn't be surprised either if you get another burst and another boost. And, you know, you don't know with Arsenal. You can see them going there and losing. But listen, I'd expect Arsenal to win. They're a team I expect to be very good this year. I've seen during the week of Arsenal fans, a few odd ones setting up a petition to get the manager sacked for whatever reason. You know, a few games into the season and you just have to give it a chance to settle down and let their new signings get going.
Exactly. I think after the last couple of weeks, well, if you're looking at a bet for that one, I think Granit Xhaka had to get a yellow card after the Ireland game. John Giles referred to him as the most indisciplined player he's ever seen. So that could be an interesting one. But speaking of predictions, Kevin, you've put together a little treble for the weekend. What games have you been looking at?
I'm going to say Leicester get a draw at Old Trafford. Let me see. I'm not going to give a Man City beating. No, I'm trying to give some value here. Burnley to win away to Brighton.
Interesting one.
And the third one, I would say Southampton and Sheffield United be a draw.
Southampton and Sheffield United be a draw. That's an interesting one as well, I suppose, for those teams that I think both teams, you'd look at those and you say, right, well, they're definitely good enough to stay up, but they could get dragged into a relegation fight.
Yeah. Southampton, you know, they were in it last year and they got out and they finished very strong. Again, another team, new manager came in with, I don't know, was it 10 games to go, and he got them turned around and playing quite well. I thought they'd start a little better than they did. They're fine. But yeah, they're a team, you know, that you could see slipping in there. Sheffield United spent a good bit of money, and I love the way they play, and I watch them last year, and I really like our manager. But again, we're up against it. They're trying, if they can stay up this year, you know, they could push on from that. But it's just getting through this first year. A few Irish players playing the Sheffield United team, you really want to see them stay up, but you know, it's a tough ask.
37-1 for that treble, Kevin. So we'll take that. You know, if we can get that as a start, you know, and then we'll just put it. We'll put it €1 on that there, responsible gambling, and we'll take the 37 euro and put it on your treble next week. And sure, she's in no time.
Good stuff. Thanks very much for chatting to us, Kevin.
All right, lads. No worries. Thank you.
Well. Poor old Kevin, he's not made it easy on himself. He's got to live up to Stephen Ferris and Jason Quigley predicted in the first week. Going for one that's that big of odds, it's definitely going to be an interesting one.
37-1. It's going to keep us watching over the course of the weekend anyway. Like, Burnley to beat Brighton's a big shout, like, you know.
Burnley to beat Brighton is the one I'm nearly least sure of.
I'm liking Burnley this year again, though, you know. Both of those teams, actually. That's a good match. That's one of those matches that you'd flick over and just check your fantasy players or whatever on live score. So I'm glad now we've a reason to actually keep an eye on it, because both of those teams have interesting managers and, you know, systems, everything else that's going on. I'd like to see bloody Jeff Hendrick at a game, though.
Yeah.
Robbie Brady was black paying for the reserves last week, played very well, apparently.
Not so bad, at least yeah. He's going back into contention. And the Southampton game, I'd love to see Shane Long as well, or Michael Obafemi, one or two, both of them, hopefully, get a bit more game time. Because Long definitely, I still think, has a future with Ireland if he can just get on the pitch a bit more. And if you are having a bet on that treble, or indeed anything else across the weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly. Just keep it fun. And one thing you can that is fun and you can play for absolutely free is Ladbrokes 1-2 free, where you can win €100 if you correctly predict the score of three of this weekend's matches. This weekend, the games are Norwich against Man City, Bournemouth against Everton, Watford against Arsenal. If you get one of them right, you win a €1 free bet. If you get two of them right, you win a €5 free bet. And if you get all three, you win €100 cash. And Mick, I am absolutely sure this weekend that I'm going to get all three.
Are you?
Yep.
Oh, well, I felt very good last week now, I have to say. As I told you earlier on the show, when I was like counted down and texted you about the results and stuff like that, and it went away from me. I've had 4 weeks in a row now I've won the free bet. As I said, I made use of it last week. I'm determined I'm going to get the £100 before the end of the year. But I don't think this is my week. I'm glad to know that you're confident, because I'm not.
Yeah, we were chatting to people who were saying in Ladbrokes on Friday down at our launch, and they were saying the weekend, so the weekend gone by for the before the international break,
Premier League
were,
one, yeah,
that there were a good few people won the €100 cash, and I think this is the week that I joined them.
Okay,
I'm going for right, and obviously we do it on site every day or every week as well. We've got a video up on our social media channels and on site where it's a couple of myself, yourself, and Shane this week
between us,
we picked a game each, and I was looking at them and I'm like, Jesus, lads, do you know, we're not a bad trio this week. I really liked the look of all those predictions that we've made. I've made a slight adjustment to one of them since.
Okay.
I've second guessed myself, and I think this is going to be what will end up screwing me. So I'm going to give you 2-1-2 free picks, really.
Okay,
I'm going to give you
on.
The one I'm going to go with, and the one that's actually going to win the €100.
Sure, give me your picks out for Norwich and City, and we'll see how we
this
are.
Is the one.
Okay.
I've gone Norwich 1, Man City 5.
Now, right.
I think it was you in the 1-2-3 video this week went for 4-1 Man
yeah.
City. I like 4-1 Man City, but the more I think about it, Norwich like to play football. They're not going to sit back and defend against City. They're going to try and attack, which is why I think they're going to get a goal, but it's also why I think that City could make hay. And this could be like the opening game of the season that Norwich had against Liverpool, where everyone was kind of like, what are they doing here? This is madness. And it could be the same case again. And that's why I think that City might actually get 5 goals. But the more I think about it, the more I really want to go back to that 4-1, because I have made a reputation, a life's reputation, for second guessing myself and the first guess to be right. So actually, no, screw it, I'm going back. Man City 4.
Oh, Jesus, Mary and Joseph. God, that, talk about you second guessed yourself there because you didn't want to second guess yourself. You're a mad, mad human being. I did a load of research on this, like just on numbers and stats and all, but that like really kind of mean nothing, but I've done the work of them now, so I want to tell you them anyway, right? Man City only conceded 23 goals in the Premier League last season, 38 games, right? Only 11 of them were away from home, so they conceded 11 times in their 19 away fixtures, right? However, almost all of them, 9 of those 11 goals, were in games outside of teams in the top six. Yeah. So in those 14 games of teams in the top six, they conceded 9. Now, they conceded to the likes of Brighton, to Newcastle, and teams like that. I can't remember anybody else off the top of my head. So, like, it's not inconceivable they will concede, right?
They're like an NFL team in that there's such a thing when you play Man City and also Liverpool to an extent. There's junk time. There's like...
Yeah.
That if the game won and someone will get a goal right before the end.
So the way I'd look at it is, it's like 9 out of 14 games. Obviously, some of those score 2, including Newcastle. They, you know, there's about a 50% chance that Man City concede away from home in these games against non-top six teams, right? However, if you're looking at a 50% chance that it's going to happen anyway, I think you have to go with the team who scored 93 goals in the league last season.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what Norwich did. They've already scored, I think, 6 in the Premier League in their 4 games so far this season. So they're not like, they're not struggling now that they've gone up a level. And also, so I think they'll score. And then you have to look at City, have already scored 14 goals in 4 games. They'll score a load of games. They're on a different planet than Norwich, as Kevin was talking about earlier. So, like, I think 4 or 5. I think, but it's the most I've ever thought about a 1-2-3 pick. And yet still,
it's
up in the air because you're talking about 4-1 as your pick, you know. Yeah. But that's what I'm going for. It's the best I can do, Mark. And if that my best isn't good enough, then so be it.
Bournemouth, Everton, Shane Cahill in our 1-2-3 video went for 1-1. I like 1-1 in this one. I'm also going for 1-1.
I also have already done my Will Ladbrokes 1-2-3 just so that I can't change my mind like you mad Egypt. And I've also gone for 1-1.
I can't
believe the three of us have already picked 1-1. I think it kind of has it written all over it, but all the numbers and work and stats I did for the City game, I've done none of it for this one. I'm just guessing that that's what's going to happen.
Watford against Arsenal. We spoke about it earlier with Kevin. I'm going for 3-1 Arsenal in this one. Watford, they actually are on a really bad run of form. It's not just the opening few games of the season. If you look back over the last 16 games, they only won 4 of them. I think, funnily enough, I think Manchester United actually only won 2 of the last 16. But anyway, and look at Arsenal. They've kept, 2 clean sheets in a season and 4 games away from home so far.
Yeah, but one of them was this season.
Yeah, true. But yeah. Watford, there'll be a little bit of a kick in them. I don't know if Flores is going to have quite, you know, it's going to take a little while to get settled back in. It is an interesting one, though, because if that was a completely different manager, I'd say this 3-1, well, not 3-1 is nailed on, but a comprehensive Arsenal win, because it's going to take a manager a while to, you know, stamp his authority on that team. But because he's just coming back again, they could just immediately get back into the groove and, you know, it'd be like he never left. So
yeah, players though. Like I'd agree. I think Watford will actually probably end up being fine. I think they've probably got enough good players there. The thing with Arsenal is I think that there's a little bit more, maybe it's conservatism, I'm not sure if that's the word, away from home this year. I think they'll still be crackpots at the Emirates, you know, but I kind of fancy this to be 1-0
to Arsenal.
I think it could be a kind of a low key affair. I think a lot of Watford, even before they got rid of Grazia, I think even just the last game against Newcastle was about stemming the flood. I'm mixing up my metaphors here, but stopping the flooding, you know. And you know, they did it. They got it. Like, it was only a 1-1 draw at Newcastle, but I think that that's what they'll be looking to do here, is that they don't want to go out and get a whooping, and like, you know, they're going to have probably 1 point from 5 games. They don't want to be going in there on the back of to the 6th game on the back of a 4-0, 5-0 loss, you know. So I think they'll try and play it cool, and I think that might just stop them from getting forward, getting the goal that they need. So I think Arsenal might just win at 1-0.
Interesting. Look, if you think you can do any better, you can play Ladbrokes 1-2-3 right now in store, or
you definitely can do better.
For absolutely free. And also, I'm just looking at mine. My picks are Man City draw Arsenal, which is the same as you. Comes in at about 6.5-1 on Ladbrokes.com as well. So it's another treble. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, okay.
Right, it's high time we got into some good Gaelic games chat. We've got Maurice Brosnan coming into studio next. He's going to give us his insights ahead of this weekend's 4 All-Ireland Gaelic football finals. Wasn't it very sound of the Dublin and Kerry lads to, they obviously listened to this podcast, because they thought, well, the lads, Maurice Brosnan wasn't in the week of the All-Ireland final. He wasn't able to come on to this show and give his preview of the game. So we'll make sure it goes to replay, and then Maurice will be able to come in for that match. So Maurice, you're here.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for both teams for doing that for me. It's been
and the football gods.
Yeah.
The GAA gods.
Most importantly, yeah. It's been a weird 2 weeks for me anyway, in that, like, I, as you could probably tell, seeing that I met you straight after the whistle, was buzzing after this game. And that kind of sense of euphoria carried over for the last few weeks, while everybody else was like descending into madness about Goff and Brolly and everything else that was going on. So now it does this, like, a foreboding sense of me. I feel like that everything is fine meme, where like the world is on fire around you, but you're just sitting there happy out.
So in that regard, then you must be into, because I'm getting what was happening to me was that I was really excited, going the same as you. Obviously, we were recording the podcast on the night of the game, and it's like, geez, you know, Kerry can improve, Dublin can improve. We did a show last week, and everyone's still talking the same thing. And then closer get to it, I start getting worried that, geez, Dublin could run away with this. But you're not the same England, are you?
No.
I'm not off. I have that feeling. I think my head still thinks that, and we'll talk about that in a while when we come to predictions, but my head still thinks it'll be very close.
No, yeah, I also think it'll be very close. I don't have that fear, funnily enough, but I do have a fear that, given how that game went, that it'll revert to 2015 type, as opposed to it could become a total dog of war scrap, Keenan Sullivan sweeping and filling that space, a real, real cagey affair, which I think is actually the worst possible scenario because of how everybody else in football would react after that. But I don't have that same fear of Dublin running away. That I also, but I didn't have it for the last final either. It's just not really on my radar. Maybe that's again, everything is fine. It's the fire descends.
For me, I think it's that Dublin's conversion rate was so poor inside Kerry 45 the first day. And like people talk about whatever about like, oh, such and such only, you know, only had three forwards going from play or anything like that. It doesn't matter who the players are. It's that's more of a damning statistic, that like the amount of times Kerry were able to stifle their attack, Dublin missed points, missed chances. But the thing then, I think that, and then I'm worried. And then the next thing I remember is, but wait a minute, Kerry, that was because of what Kerry did. And Kerry are well capable of doing that again.
Yeah, conversion rates aren't important on their own, because I remember some of those chances and they were like, I remember Dean Rock dropping one short that he kicked from under the stand inside the 45, but not the type of chance that Dublin normally go to. They did that because that was the only chances they had. Kerry stifled them. That could happen again. There's no reason to think it wouldn't. It's not just because Dublin shooting was wayward. If any team shooting was wayward in the first half, especially, it was Kerry.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they I think that's been overlooked totally. That whatever about the ceiling that Dublin have, Kerry also have a higher ceiling than what we saw last week. And I can only imagine how much of a good it'll have done the 15 players who played in the first All-Ireland final to actually do that experience and come back now all the better for it.
So after all that, lads, here's what I've been looking at on ladsbrooks.com. And you have talked me into it even more. I'm even more sure of it happening now than I was 5 minutes ago or 3 minutes ago. Dublin to win after extra time, 14-1. There. Have it. Talk about that.
I mean, I like it.
It's a medium-sized shout, Mark.
It's almost a big shout. Not quite a big shout, but it's quite a shout.
The one that I was looking at with way less odds, this again, this is special, that was for the Ireland final, it's back for the football final, a winner, it doesn't matter who, by 4 points or less at evens. And that's, I think, on the similar vein to you, that this will be a really tight game. I really don't see Dublin running away with this. That could come back to bite me, because they're well capable of it. But I just feel like what Kerry do, I've been thinking about this game a lot, and since then I was doing other stuff and looking at space is so, so important for its game. I think that every kind of tactical innovation or matchup is dictated on trying to create space. And I actually think that both teams have personnel to square off with each other really, really well. Like, I do foresee a circumstance where Keenan Sullivan, if he can stand on one leg at all, if he's anyway fit, would start and try and clog up that space in front of David Clifford to free up James McCarthy to go to midfield. But then you're thinking, well, Kerry's reaction is actually easy, because they can bring on Tommy Walsh and Dublin have to take a massive gamble and put somebody like Fitzsimons or Cooper, or bring on Philly McMahon and put him on him. Or they have to take James McCarthy out and try and use him to clog that space back there again. So try and match up against Tommy Walsh. So I think the way these two teams are set up against each other actually suits each other for it to be a pretty competitive game. So I'm willing to... to take that.
I like that one. Someone to win by four. Is it four points or less, or less than four?
Four or less.
Four or less.
At evens, which is the same as what you had for the hurling final. It obviously didn't work out, but I think we've probably more evidence that this is going to be the case in this one. And I think there's a point with this Dublin team that I think people forget as well, through all their dominance, is that one, they haven't really walked away with an All-Ireland final. I think last year is probably as close to it. But two is, like, with Mayo and Kerry, it's, we always kind of think, oh, the next day, oh, Dublin can go and hammer them the next day, or, you know, somewhere. And it never actually does happen, because these teams are too wily and too smart. I suppose, obviously, I'm talking about the Mayo team up until 2017, probably not of the last 2 years, where they're probably just that slight bit over, you know, kind of dropped to the next level. But, you know, I think that really does add to it. Like, Dublin don't tend to go and be carried by 2-3 goals. It's just not going to happen. And if we look at the evidence of what we've seen this year between the league match in Tralee and the match two Sundays ago, Kerry have arguably had the better of the matchups across this season in this fixture.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think that I think it'll be a tight game. The only reason that I still lean slightly towards Dublin is because the, on that idea of matchups and on whatever about coaching innovation or like that. I think Dublin have more scope to do something that Kerry couldn't react to, like a bolter, which happens in replays, which Dublin do in replays, with Michael Fitzsimons, who didn't start, came in for the replay and was man of the match. Onagara didn't work, but it was still something out of the blue. If you're looking at potential options, like I could see scope for any of Dermot Connolly, Bulger, Brogan to come back into this, at the very least, squad.
Or Ogara, actually, more so into the team.
I think Dublin have more scope to do something that Kerry can't react to than Kerry do. Now, I mean, we could be sitting here next week and James O'Donoghue, who could have scored 1-3, and we'll all be.
And Killian Spillane, who's the new Kevin McManaman of this time, is bound to come on and just cause a load of havoc. On that note, right, they're the players that could come in. But of the lads that are pretty much guaranteed to start, I'm going to put a challenge out there to you lads. Who's going to win the RT Man of the Match?
So, Mark, how many points did David Clifford score in the final?
I don't know. I can't remember. Two, was it?
Two, yeah. Exactly. How many should he have scored?
Four, I would say.
Five.
David Clifford to score more than 3.5 scores is almost even money, 4-5. I think that is an extremely attractive bet. You have to remember how difficult they found it to, like,
yeah.
I think he should have had 6 points, actually, if you go back over it. I think he kicked two wides on the near side on the left, one on the right. He could have, there was a shot that was blocked down in the second half. He squared it in back inside to Sean O'Shea, and Sean, so the eventually it wasn't blocked down, they got swallowed up. He could have taken the shot on himself before unselfishly shipping it out. And so I actually think he could have had
a goal as well if he wasn't fouled for the penalty.
I'll also say that those things that's not should have scored. Like, he's going to pass the ball to the easier option again this week. You know, like, he's not, like, hopefully, like, he does seem that type of person, and he's probably going to have a wide at least, and he might be blocked down again. You know, like, as in, he probably should have had 4 points. He probably had 6 or 7 chances.
No, I actually totally disagree. I think that 9 times out of 10, David Clifford kicks those 3 whites. Like, there are 10 times, like, that was the one. I think they're so unlike him. It was actually, who was on co-commentary for this game who said it?
Kevin McStay said,
this was on Sky Sports. With Dave McIntyre.
Paul Early?
It was Paul Early. Paul Early said, geez, that was a chosen measure room to his third one. He missed 2 wides and kicked the third one. His point was that was the hardest of 3 shots, and it shows the measure of
how many of those chances were when Johnny Cooper was on versus when Michael Fitzsimons was on him. Because if Michael Fitzsimons doesn't start, from the start, then Jim Gavin is a Sheraton and my handbag on those in Ireland.
Eamon Fennell was talking about this at our show in the Hudson Bay last week, where he was saying that, like, the idea that Johnny Cooper, who is a marker and gets out in front and isn't an under the high ball defender, was picked on Clifford in the first place was ridiculous. That Mick Fitzsimons can handle him all day long, and Johnny Cooper's gets out in front of Gainey, and that's the obvious solution for a Dublin full back line. That's a guy who's played with both players.
Well, that's interesting.
And I know that's not what we thought, but like he was like adamant about it. He was like, he literally emphasized the word, it's ridiculous, you know? So, which kind of surprised me, but it's definitely how it played out, you know? Like, I mean, Cooper was at sea with Clifford, and we don't see Cooper at sea very often.
Bet that you're talking about, Morris, off the back of my question, does that mean that you are insinuating that you think David Clifford's going to be the RT Man of the Match
at 11-1? I think it's very
it's interesting.
I like it a lot. I think Clifford is set to explode in this game. I think that the manner, I think he actually will be sore about those misses. I think there's a bit of David in him, and he won't like the fact that he was kind of quietened after Cooper went off. I think he in his own mind was set to explore. And most importantly, I think he's furious, absolutely furious, that he's taken out of the Bozzardy Rolling All-Stars.
By you.
And is adamant that he deserves to go back into it.
He would have got good odds on that, even in this office, that he was going to be taken out of the All-Stars. Because
Mark didn't reply to a message, which was like, speak now or forever you hold your peace. For like 8 hours, he was out of the office and didn't see it. And then long after it was published, it was already up on all our balls on the social platforms. Mark comes in and goes, no, I objected to this.
I believe it was Clifford decision to disgrace.
No, you jumped in, like, originally had seen the message and was like, no, please stop, not realising everything had happened. I've got a man-in-the-match contender for you. Like Jack McCaffrey's favourite at 13-2, you know, like as he tends to be. But there's normally somebody up there with him in Dublin matches who slipped down the order just a tiny little bit to 8-1.
I know you're going to say Brian Fenton.
And that's Brian Fenton. And Brian Fenton had his quietest probably ever game in a Dublin jersey last week. Now, we know why that is. It's because Jack Barry was assigned to him. He's done a really, really good job on him more than once now, I think, you know. And look, that's great. They stifle them. But I think someone of the caliber of Fenton, and you're talking about someone who will be looking back at their performance in Clifford, like Fenton more than anyone, I can't see a possibility of him being quiet. And if he isn't, what are the chances he comes and just bolts through that Kerry defence and scores 2 or 3 points, maybe a goal, sets up? Like, I think 8-1's just great odds for it.
I absolutely. Like, he's definitely a player who it's just so hard to see somebody that good having 2 bad games in a row.
It's the same thing as the talking about Kerry, you know, Dublin beat that, Kerry can do that again defensively. Jack Barry can do that. This will be the fourth time in just over 12 months that he could take Fenton out of it. All the evidence from that matchup suggests that Barry's going to be able to. Apart from you're looking at the Fenton argument from all his accumulative matches and how good of a player we all know he is.
Yeah.
And then the argument against it is, well, every game he plays against Jack Barry.
But there's a lot of adjustments you can make in a 2-week period where you're playing these games back to back that they've never done before, you know. So I think that there's very much a look. I think Dublin probably knew that Barry was going to start, but he wasn't named and so on. There's a little bit of doubt. There's absolutely no doubt this time. They know what they're facing here, and they've 2 weeks to come up with a game plan to get their most important player, arguably, into the bloody game. You know, they can't have him be a passenger this week. So they'll have a plan for him, and maybe that's a third man coming and taking Barry out of the game a little bit to free up Fenton. We don't know how they'll do it, but I think they'll have a plan.
I think it'll take remarkable coaching creativity to get somebody like Brian Fenton into a game. Like, it's funny, right? The thing about Jack Barry didn't man mark Brian Fenton. Like, I'm going to parrot Rob Carroll, who's been on this podcast before, and Mick Foley did an article sometimes last week, but I just thought it was a very good point. What Kerry did was occupy all the spaces where Brian Fenton is so powerful. But they plugged Spillan. Like, at one stage in the second half, I was watching it, and Brian Fenton was running around after David Moran. Like, Dublin had used him to... Dublin used their most powerful engine player to man-mark David Moran. It was just... It did not make sense that they favoured that matchup. So I think it would take some sort of coaching creativity to free up Fenton in a one-on-one, 1v1, Fenton on Barry. I think Fenton still wins. I think Barry benefited from having the matchup. The thing we didn't see was Barry and Spillane both starting and clogging up that middle sphere. And then the second half, he'd Jack Sherwood on top of him, standing over him for kickouts, and he just couldn't exert himself in the game. So the way that Fenton comes into that game is if Keane Sullivan starts, Jack...
Yes, James, that's what I was about James to say, McCarthy, yeah.
James McCarthy midfield, and then...
And Fenton, Dublin have 15 players.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we've... We haven't mentioned it once. In all the talk about where McCarthy goes, where everybody goes, who picks up who, Dublin had 14 players more than half the game last time, and that's not going to be the case this time.
I like that shout, Mick. I think if James McCarthy was... If Keane Sullivan can start, James McCarthy at starting midfield, he'll take David Moran. I think that gives Fenton way more licence, and in that scenario, I think he's primed to have a do what he does.
Just some other names that jump out, by the way.
You only let me make my pick.
Okay,
no?
Go on, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Just look at trying to have some consistency in my analysis, given that I've jumped from being absolutely adamant that Dublin -5 was my prediction for the first day, and now I'm predicting that'll be a draw. I'm going to stick with Conor Callaghan for RT Man of the Match.
Okay, so he is his second favourite, I believe, as my computer jams.
He's 8-1.
And he's 15-2. He's actually, yeah, so he is second favourite. Just some other names that are there. James McCarthy, you mentioned, if he is more out the field, more involved in the game, James McCarthy is easily somebody that could pick up a Man of the Match award. He's 20-1. Paul Gainey is 20-1. If Kerry win, you'd like to think that he's probably going to get a goal or two. David Moran, 14-1. And Brian Howard, 14-1.
What's Tommy Walsh? What happens if Tommy Walsh starts? As Mark O'Shea was saying to us, that possibly starts, comes off and comes back on again. But
Peter Canavan style.
Yeah.
Actually, Morris, while I'm looking for Tommy Walsh's, I talked to Mark O'Shea about this. Why do you think that with 6 subs, nobody has ever done the Peter Canavan thing in a big game?
Yeah.
With someone with a half an hour in their legs, like.
I genuinely think it's because by nature Cote is huge conservatism and it's such an off the wall idea. It's also, I think it takes a huge amount of physical prime. Like, I know just for my own sake, if you're sitting idle for 15
the worst
minutes
possible, do you know what the worst possible thing in for in terms of, I don't know what you call it, fatigue or whatever, it isn't actually the running around the pitch, although obviously it's the cause of it, but going in at half time, when you sit down at half time,
exactly,
you come
yeah.
back out for the start of the second half and everything is just seized up. It's so hard to yeah. get going again. Sometimes you're like, Jesus, you know, we do it at club level where you've got something to, you know, like teams won't bother going in for half time and they'll just stand around and around the dugout. Like, this is actually far better because you can just keep limber and keep moving around. It's sitting in the dressing room, and it's the same thing if you come and sit on the bench. Obviously,
they could plan for
Walsh could come off
they?
And keep warmed up on the sideline and just keep moving, give himself a bit of a rest.
Yeah, that's like I think it's, I have never done it in Gaelic football. I have done it in rugby just because of circumstances where you don't have another second row, and it's the worst thing in the world coming back on. Like, you're so you spend 5 minutes trying to get going again. Like, you now part of that is probably psychological as well, which Walsh should be primed for. Like, I honestly think most of it is just down to the psychological thing. Yeah. Like, this is such a off the wall idea.
You wonder at this time though, like, what Kerry need is, we're talking about why they should start with him. They need to mess Dublin up a little bit, maybe, you know, and do something that they're not expecting. 20 minutes of Tommy Walsh, exactly that. Then they're kind of in their headspace of, like, you know, we get through this 50 minutes with him here. We can exert ourselves on the game. They're probably just about sort of coming around to thinking this is actually a good thing for us. We can kind of really own the last half an hour of this game tactically. And then they take him off after 20 minutes. Shit, what's going on here? You know, he comes back on for the most important part of the game then. You know, I think there's a lot to be said for it. It's Mark O'Shea's idea rather than my own.
Sunday is another busy day of Gaelic football action. Croke Park has got 3 games. Like, obviously, Dublin against Galway is the headline in the senior ladies' final. But I'm looking at the junior game at 11:45 as well. It's a really interesting one in terms of Fermanagh Out Loud back for a second year in a row into the junior final. That has all the markings of something that's going to be a bit of a humdinger. So, like, anyone that's going to the game, make sure to get in early for that one. Or if, obviously, they're all on TG Carr as well. You've got the intermediate final then between Meath and Tipperary at 11:45. This is an interesting one in terms of, you'll see an awful lot at club level. You don't see it so much in the men's football because that gap is so big. But you're looking at Tipperary, a Division 1 team who did all right in Division 1, but, you know, didn't set the world on fire compared to Meath, who are now in their second final of the year, having gotten to the final of, I think it was Division 3 in the National League. So, like, that's Meath are probably going to be underdogs going into it, but it really, they're on the crest of a wave all year. They've been in brilliant form, so that's going to be an interesting one. And then, obviously, Dublin against Galway. I think Dublin are 1-8 favourites, Mick. This is a tough task.
Galway 11-2, and it's going to be very hard to see. Like, there's a part of me, Morris, I hate to say this, like, to you as a Galway person, but is, like, are we at the stage with Dublin now where they were when, like, Monaghan would have played in the finals against Cork a few years ago, where making the final is almost the key to your season? I'm not, they won't be thinking that, but I mean, even in retrospect, even next Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, it's funny, like that sounds like a huge spread, and I saw, I heard Mick Bowen, the Dublin ladies manager, speaking during the week about the talk of them going on to dominate in a similar vein of Dublin has already been put to him. But I spoke to Louise Ward earlier this year from Clonburn, who's obviously playing midfield and had a stormer against Mayo in the semi-final, and she was also part of the club side that bet Carnacon, that this invincible Carnacon team this year, and said the biggest thing for them was that, like, psychological barrier of, we're going up against a juggernaut here, like, to finally get over that hurdle and beat, and, like, I remember her telling me, you know, I was playing against the greatest ladies footballer of all time in Coruscant, like, I was on the greatest ladies footballer of all time in Coruscant, and just the fact of getting used to that platform was difficult. And I just think that kind of psychological edge is actually really powerful.
Like, yeah,
and
that's what they're doing, like, again here.
Yeah,
now,
like, and yeah. Like, you look at, like, her sister Nicola is obviously back in the corner as well. Like, there's a core to that team. Megan Glynn, who again, like, had this incredible success underage. Tracy Leonard, incredible success underage. They're all, I don't think that psychological barrier is as big for this current crop of Galway players
Murray
as it might have been.
As well, is going to be heading off to play AFL as well. Yeah, so, after scoring 2 goals in semi-final.
Like, I think that the so many times in a game like that, I genuinely think you're beaten before you got on the field. That was the biggest fear for going back to the Kerry game last week. That were they, was this young team overawed by the fact that they're going up against such a powerful Dublin team? And in a similar vein, I don't think that's a problem for this Galway, this current crop of Galway players.
And they need to look no further than their camogie counterparts for any inspiration from that last weekend.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know if Galway is a final appearance. Final appearance is a great achievement for this Galway team. I definitely don't think they're going to be happy enough to turn up. I also don't think that even if they do lose, I don't know if those odds are as reflective as what this current crop are capable of.
Yeah, certainly looking forward to that. As we said, all three games are on TG Carr on Sunday, and of course the men's final is on Saturday evening at 6 p.m. Look, we're out of time. We could talk about these matches all day long. But we will be back on Friday. The three of us will be back for our three-man weave podcast, where we're going to build up to Saturday's replay. So make sure to listen to that. That's in your balls.ie podcast feed, or indeed if you search GA on balls.ie in any good podcast app, you'll be able to find it there. Also, Ladbrokes for this Ireland final replay. If you log into your Ladbrokes account anytime from 6 p.m. on Friday, you'll get a €1 free bet drop. You can use it on any sport, but why not use it on the All Ireland replay? And look at my 14-1 shout for Dublin to win after extra time isn't a bad one for a €1 free bet.
Yeah, and I told you earlier on what you can do with a €1 free bet. You can turn it into €14.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cheers, lads. Up next, we're going to talk to Jason Quigley. He's going to get us hyped for Tyson Fury versus Otto Wallen this weekend. So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped tonight. Because if a strike, it ain't for your good health, but I won't. Delighted to be joined by Jason Quigley now to preview Tyson Fury against Otto Wallen. This is sort of the road back to Deontay Wilder, I think, for Fury. But talk to us a bit, Jason, about Wallen. He's 20-0, but I'm looking at Ladbrokes, he's 10-1 to win this fight, so does he stand any chance?
Yeah, this is the special thing, especially about heavyweight boxing. One shot and he could just leave each other sleeping, so of course he could definitely be worth a bet. And, you know, looking into the more finer details of things, he is undefeated. He has been a sparring partner for the likes of Anthony Joshua before. And he's trained by a former two-time world champion, Joey Comanches, you know, so he's coming into this fight an unknown, but when you actually look in at his record and look in more about him, there's actually a lot of great attributes that he's bringing into the ring. He's young, he's in his prime, 28 years of age for a heavyweight is peak prime, and even, you know, he could only just be reaching his prime now at the minute, coming into the early stages of it. He doesn't know what defeat tastes like yet. He's hungry, he's determined, and, you know, he's a big lad, and he's bringing in that great record with him. And the most important thing is the opportunity of a lifetime. If he beats Tyson Fury, where does that leave him then in his career?
Yeah, he's kind of had he's moved to the US, and he's had a bit of misfortune in that his last fight, I think his opponent pulled out on the day of the fight. Nick Kistner, before that, it was ruled a no contest in the middle of the first round after Kistner got a cut over his eye. He's the type of guy as well that Fury's probably looking forward to facing, because Fury mentioned that he was looking for somebody tall, somebody that kind of was similar in build to Wilder. Is that kind of what Fury's it's more focusing on the Wilder fight really, and just trying to get that right kind of contest in advance of that?
Yeah, of course. Like, this is the only thing in Tyson Fury's head is getting that rematch with Deontay Wilder, and all these fights now in Fury's head and in his team's head is getting him prepared and getting him ready for a Deontay Wilder rematch, because at the end of the day, we don't really know much about Wallen. We didn't really know much about Swartz. And these type of fighters are just preparation for Tyson Fury. But this is the danger as well. If he's going in there thinking that this is a preparation fight, that this is warm-up fights, and he's taking his eye off the ball and maybe looking a wee bit too far ahead, that's another dangerous thing to bring into the ring. And it can be a positive for Wallen if he uses that against Tyson Fury. So this is a very interesting fight. It's an exciting fight. But at the end of the day, Tyson Fury is Tyson Fury. To go through what he went through, you know, with his issues that he had and the weight that he went up and taking it back down, it just showed the type of man that Tyson Fury is, the determination that he has brought into his own personal life and into his career life in boxing. You know, so I think Tyson Fury's in a great place right now, mentally and physically. And I'm not too sure if I'm the only one that has noticed this, but he's actually not really being himself. He's keeping very quiet on social media and things like that there. There's not a big splash about him at the minute, so you can look into that whatever way you want, but it's not like Tyson Fury to be so quiet.
No, not the shy and retiring type is Tyson usually. Anyway, yeah, it's actually mad that we're getting you to get hyped for this fight. Normally, Tyson does that all on himself. It's funny though. You mentioned like his comeback and what he had to do to get to that stage, even in his own head. And obviously, it is incredibly impressive though. As a boxer, specifically though, what is that? Razor sharp focus now, has that made him a better fighter, do you think? Obviously, in the few times that we've seen him since he's come back, like, has he even stepped up a level from where he was 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, I think that he definitely has, because going through what he's went through and probably seeing the bottom of the barrel really that he did see made him realize how important boxing was to him and how much it actually meant to him. And to be so close to throwing it all away, I think Tyson Fury caught himself at the perfect time. He's still young. He's still fresh. He was able to get himself back into great physical condition. And now he's in great mental condition as well. So he's really, I think, the best Tyson Fury now that you could possibly get because of the experiences that he has went through and how focused he is going to be now. He's seen the bottom of the barrel, and he's not going to want to go back down that low in his life or that low in his career again, because he's right up there now with the best of them. There's people running about that are stating him as the best heavyweight out there, and he doesn't really have many belts. He's still holding the lineal belt, you know what I mean, but he doesn't have all the major world titles out there, but people are still calling him the king of the heavyweight division. And it's just a matter of time, not a thing, that Tyson goes out there and proves that, because he's so frustrating as a fighter. Like, you know, he's so unorthodox what he does. He messes with you. He plays with you. He beats a lot of his opponents mentally more than anything else, I think. And for the height of him, for the size of him, to be able to move the way he moves and be able to have the speed in his hands the way that he does, you know, he's a tough, tough task for any fighter out there at the moment. And as I said, look, these are all stepping stones to the Deontay Wilder rematch. And I think it's going to be a very exciting one. I just hope to God that he keeps his eye on the ball, because Otto Wallen is a tough, tough, young, hungry, undefeated fighter with a good team around him. And he's going to be coming in there with an opportunity of a lifetime.
Wonder what you make of the heavyweight kind of scene in general. So you had, like, obviously Joshua caught last time, you know, we were kind of building up with a sort of a big three. You know, you don't know where Joshua falls in that. Obviously, with what happened between Wilder and Fury, where it's all a kind of a little bit blurred. And I think that the hype that maybe we had 6 or 9 months ago might have like died down a little bit. Do you feel like it's on a kind of a, we're in obviously the post Klitschko world where, you know, there's room for somebody to emerge and be that kind of next heavyweight superstar. Are we still kind of treading water a little bit with it, do you think?
Yeah, and I hope that this doesn't end up like a Manny Pacquiao Mayweather type fight where it took so long to happen and then it was a really disappointing fight. I think everyone wants to see Fury Joshua, and that's just the fight that is on the tip of everyone's tongue, that everyone wants to see, because they know the way that Tyson will try to wind up Joshua, and Joshua has bit once or twice at him as well. So that fight has the whole side of, you could say that fight has people that really aren't into boxing but love the kind of banter and everything that goes on with it.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
You have the actual boxing people as well that would be mad about that fight as well, because, you know, we know Anthony Joshua is a great fighter. We know he looks in incredible condition, but we know he is chinny as well, and a big shot can leave him on his ass. So it's an exciting fight. I think that it's something that should happen soon. Whether it will or won't, I'm not too sure, because of the way the heavyweight division right now, you have the likes of Anthony Joshua signed with Matchroom, you have Tyson Fury signed with Top Rank, you have Deontay Wilder with PBC, and then you have Ruiz, I think he might be in around the PBC or something like that as well. So, you know, everything's up in a heap at the minute. Nobody is really signed to the same promoter that can make fights easy. Any fight like that that's going to be made now, it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of negotiations, and there's never going to be 100% at the end of it, whether it's going to happen or not. So it's kind of a frustrating time now for the heavyweight division, and especially the fight fans of the heavyweight division.
Yeah, I think even for the boxers themselves, I heard Fury kind of, in terms of trying to find an opponent for this fight, he was like, how difficult it was, given that none of the boxers wanted to actually fight him. Looking at this, when we were chatting to you the last time with Lomachenko, you started off well. You said that Lomachenko was going to go the distance and he was going to win it by decision. What are you looking at this weekend?
I'm looking at this fight as Wallen, you know, hasn't come up against a massive caliber of fighters, and he only kind of has 13 knockouts, so I don't really see Wallen causing any, you know, landing any big shots, causing Fury any bother in that sense of landing the big one on him, because as we've seen as well, that Fury is a pretty good chin. If he can get up from that shot from Deontay Wilder, I think he'll get up from anything. But this fight, I think that Fury's going to frustrate the undefeated young fighter very early on. And I think it's going to be a late stoppage, maybe between the 8th and 10th round.
Ah, very good. So you're looking at 10-1 on Ladbrokes for the 8th round, 12 for the 9th and 10, or 16 for the 10th. As well, before we let you go, who's going to win the replay, Dublin or Kerry?
Oh, jeez. I think Kerry missed their chance. They missed a penalty. They had Dublin down a man. I think the Dubs is going to pull through on this one and show their class now and overcome Kerry. I think Kerry just missed the boat on the last weekend, but they just let it slip. So I'm going to go with the Dubs for the All-Ireland this year, 5 in a row.
You can hear the pain in your voice when you're saying that, Dilly.
I didn't want to say it, but if you felt it.
Thanks very much for chatting to us, Jason. It'll definitely be a good Saturday night anyway between that and the fight.
Definitely. Nice one, lads. All the best. Thanks for having me on again.
Great stuff there from Jason. Yeah, if you look at the group betting between rounds, Tyson Fury between rounds 7 and 12 to win is 9-5, which of course falls inside that 8-10 round bracket if you didn't want to go on them individually. Fury is like, he's one of those boxers, obviously, as Jason said himself, like the likes we were talking about Lomachenko a couple of weeks ago, that maybe the fair weather boxing fan doesn't appreciate how good he is just because he's such a good technical fighter. Whereas Fury is someone to put on a show. He's determined to put on a show every time he goes into the ring. He's going to do it again this weekend. He's already promising it. So when he's the kind of boxer that, you know, if you're just that fan that just dips in and out of the sport, yeah, you love watching.
Yeah, the Wilder fight, like, and even just like getting up from that punch, like Jason just mentioned there a second ago, is indicative of exactly what you're talking about there. Is like, that's the occasion fight. That's what, it's a heavyweight thing in one way, and it is a Fury thing in a almost more accurate, you get together, you stay up, you might have a few drinks, few people over, and everybody can enjoy and watch it as an occasion. And I think that's what he does, and especially when he gets to kind of the bigger fights. Although, like, I have to say, I'm intrigued by this matchup now. I think going against anyone undefeated, you don't know what level they can rise to.
Yeah, you Schwartz know, was undefeated, I think, as well. But there was that sort of feeling that, like, even Fury was kind of talking to him, you know, like, as he kind of tends to do or whatever in the fight. It wasn't like, I was just listening even to Wallen's promoter talking during the week. He's coming with a completely different attitude. He's like, he's here to shock the world. So, like, it's one of those that, as Jason said, if he if he underestimates him, or if he tries to put on too much of a show, he could actually get caught. There's always that possibility. Mm. But at the same point, you'd hate to see it, because everybody wants, you know, Fury to win and march on towards that Wilder fight and the possible Joshua fight.
Yeah. Even before Fury was at world level, he was still a very exciting fighter to watch. One of my favorite things on the whole of YouTube is a 2-second clip, literally a 2-second clip of Tyson Fury with hair when he was just fighting at British title level, punching himself in the face.
I love Tyson Fury.
He missed an uppercut and followed through right into his own nose and actually hurt himself. Jeez. More than the fighter he was fighting did anyway.
I was going to say, I love from the last fight, I think it was the week of it, the media event where he's dodging a stick. Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
That's brilliant. But anyway, that fight is obviously coming up Saturday.
Are you hyped?
I'm very hyped. We're certainly hyped.
Jason's got us hyped twice now.
He's a good lad. He's a good lad to get you hyped. His excitement for these boxing fights always just get me. They just suck me in straight away. And even if it is going to be, you know who's going to win it. You're almost looking then to see the little stories and the little narratives. And if, for instance, if he's going to win it between the 8th and 10th round.
Yeah.
But Nick, up next, we're going to have our big shout for this week and obviously talk about some NFL.
All right, hold it. Hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't. Get round! No, don't! Bloody!
Big shout time. It's our chance and your chance, listener, to win 2 cakes and a sports biography. We do it every week. We're tasked with coming up to a big show. We're coming up with a big show that's 25-1 or greater for the sporting weekend. You too can do it. You can send it to thegaffer@balls.ie. You can get in touch with us on social media @balls.ie as well. You can get it on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. But the best way, I think, is if you email us thegaffer@balls.ie. That way we'll be sure not to miss it. And if your shout comes off, you will win 2 cakes and a sports biography. One person who did not win 2 cakes and a sports biography was Mick McCarthy, because Mick, last weekend, you predicted that Ireland-Wales would end a draw, and you couldn't be any more wrong.
No, Ireland won by 9 points. I wasn't right. Yep. Move on. We live to fight another day. These are big shouts for a reason. I wanted to go for one that was like closer to, like, it was actually 25-1, which is the limit, because we haven't been pulling off the Wilder odds, so... Do you know what? That's the last time I'm going to be doing it by that mark. From now on, I'm just going with the thing I feel might happen and put it all together and hope for the best no matter what the odds. Much in the same way that Kevin Doyle did on his debut today. He made a fool out of us.
Yeah, I mean, there's like my big show, I'm tasked to come up with a big show today, and I can guarantee you now, I tell you this, I think it's big, but it's nowhere near as big as Kevin's, because if that comes off, we're going to have to send him 2 cakes in sports biography.
Absolutely.
So my one this week, Mick, right? I'm fairly sure of this coming off. It's actually there's only one thing that I'm questioning, right? And we've already talked about it. It's the Dublin Kerry game. And I'm sticking with this nagging feeling that I have that it's going to end up being a draw again, right? I'm not going for, we said Dublin to win after extra time at 14-1. I'm just going to go Dublin Kerry to be a draw, right? At 10-1 on Ladbrokes. Then I'm backing that up with Liverpool to be ahead after 60 minutes against Newcastle. That's the early kickoff on Saturday.
Okay.
Liverpool are going to beat Newcastle. They're going to be ahead by 60 minutes, I think. And that's actually there. That's 1-3 on its own. But I'm going to, this third bet makes it into a treble that's almost 27-1. It's the New England Patriots -18.5 against the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, I'm fairly sure if the touch rugby team from Black Rock went out at the weekend, they'd probably beat Miami Dolphins at American football right now.
Yeah, the Dolphins struggled against the Ravens in the first game. They're basically tanking, which is, they're one of the first NFL teams to kind of almost openly tank. They've got like to try and get the number one pick and to rebuild, you know, and start getting together draft picks for last year. They traded one of their best players, their left tackle, a really young left tackle, a couple of weeks ago as well. Just I'd be very, very wary of them this year. And the Patriots have started off like a house on fire, beat the Steelers by 30 points, and defending Super Bowl champions. Everything points to the Pats absolutely hammering the Dolphins this week, except for the fact that the Dolphins are in the same division. The Dolphins down in Miami have a weirdly good record no matter how bad they are against the Patriots. They won on a miracle play people will have seen last year when Gronk ended up being in the last man of defense for some reason. He was brought in for, it was supposed to be a Hail Mary and they ran it 70 yards. And a few other things, such as in American football, you never know what the score is going to be because there's going to be a lot of garbage time, and in a real rout, there can be second teams in and so on and so forth. However, although it's a massive spread, I could see the Patriots winning this game by 60 points.
Holy Christ.
I'm not saying they will. I'm saying I could see it, you know.
That's a big shout.
That is a huge shout, yeah, yeah. So, look, I'm with you. I'm with you, I have to say. Dublin Kerry, a draw is obviously the big one there. If you're starting off, if you're getting that up, when's Newcastle and Liverpool on?
Newcastle and Liverpool is on there to kick off.
On Saturday?
On Saturday, yeah.
Okay, right. So, you get a draw. If you're coming in, if you're staying alive in this bed on Saturday, there's a draw in the All-Ireland final. Not only will we be tremendously
Imagine
excited.
If it's let you down.
I know.
Oh, holy Christ.
They're easily good. But sure, look, it's a good... They all sound good when we do them here early in the week on the build-up. They really do. They all sound totally plausible.
Yeah.
But they never bloody happen.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at Dublin against Kerry, for it to be a draw in itself is a big shout, but not a big enough shout to get to 25-1. So that's why I've added in those couple of other little tasty numbers. Mick, before we go, you've got a couple of NFL picks in general for this weekend. I think Patriots aside.
Yeah, Patriots aside for sure. Like, you know, we're doing a build-up podcast. We're building up to the sport of the weekend. We're looking at a few different bits of odds and bets with Ladbrokes. I spend a way over the top amount of time looking at watching NFL, looking at my fantasy teams, all of that in the build-up, listening to NFL podcasts. I need to put it to work. So I'm doing picks against the spread on this podcast, whether you like it or not.
I was about to say, Mick sat down for this podcast. He knows everything there is to know about left tackles, right tackles, front tackles, back tackles, and every defense in the NFL, and then asked me who's taking part in the All-Ireland Final Replay.
I did, yeah. Look, this week is a really hard one for the NFL picks because there's a lot of home underdogs. So, and the statistics will show, especially earlier in the season, that teams that are underdogs against the spread at home tend to beat the spread more often than they don't. It's like, it's just a slight statistical anomaly. It's like 60-40 or something like that. So you don't really like betting against them. And sometimes it's big spreads as well. But it's like, The three picks I've gone for are all road teams, which isn't ideal. You like to have a kind of a home banker in there. You like to think there's like, look, they can only go so high with the spread, much like with the Patriots. You know, you can only go to 10 or 11 because something might happen, but you fancy them. So they're all risky. It's not the greatest week for it, but I'll go through the three picks anyway, right? I'm going for Monday Night Football to start with. The Browns versus the Jets in New York, right? Almost beloved Cleveland Browns. Before you picked the Buffalo Bills, who had their magic comeback.
I want to talk with them in a minute, but we get Browns first.
Okay, Grant. So the Browns really let themselves down. They were awful in the first game of the season against the Titans. That was at home. Baker Mayfield was poor. They didn't get Odell Beckham into it. You know, a lot of things bad. They gave away a million penalties. It was just a really indisciplined, really poor, borderline shameful performance, and it was very much the Cleveland Browns being the Cleveland Browns. However, if they go and lose to the Jets this week, even though it is in New York or New Jersey where they actually play, their season is kind of over. The Ravens look really, really good in that division. The Steelers are going to come back. It's too much. Like, you don't want to be 0-2. I think that this is a real kind of come to Jesus week for them. Therefore, I think that they, just talent-wise, the Jets weren't too bad. They still lost to the Bills, but they weren't too bad. They played well at times. But I think that just talent-wise, the Browns are a bit better than them. And I think that they'll manage to win. And if they do, I always like to think, look, you're going to win by a field goal, at least, even in a close game. They're -2.5. Favorites on the road again. Not what I want, but in this case, I'm going to go for the Browns. Going to skip ahead to another favorite on the road, which isn't what I want, but in this case, I'm pretty comfortable with it. The Chiefs are at the Raiders. The Raiders surprised a lot of people by beating Denver on Monday night, but I think the Raiders are ultimately going to be a kind of a basket case this year. You won't know what you're going to get with them from one week to another. The Chiefs, on the other hand, you will. Patrick Mahomes came out, looked like he'd never been away. He was trying no-look passes and all, like in the second quarter, the first game of the season. Go on.
I'll tell you what. I would say the Chiefs must have listened to this podcast last week and pinned it up in the dressing room wall, because Sammy Watkins went out like a man possessed after me completely writing him off. I was like, just don't, I'll support any team once Sammy Watkins is not in it, which is basically purely based off fantasy football from about 4 years ago when I owned him and he did nothing.
Yeah, and generally he's done nothing forever. And I got him in one of the leagues where you just kind of, he was one of the lads left over. But you kind of thought, after week one or two now, I'll probably end up in getting rid of him and get some young lad who's, you know, off the waiver wire who's come true that you don't know yet. And then what do we do? Left him on the bench. He's got 50 points and Tyreek Hill's out injured. So he's going to be the number one receiver on the best offense of football with the best passer in Patrick Mahomes. So look, the Chiefs are -7.5. Ideally, you don't want that to be more than a touchdown, but and it's a divisional game as well. So there's a natural rivalry in there and it's in Oakland. They're in their final season in Oakland. The Raiders are, but I just think that they have too much firepower. And I think over the course of a game, even though their defense isn't great, that this is the kind of game that could be 45-25, you know, but that'll be more than 7.5. And then the last one I'm going for, and I've generally put all these together into around a 6-1 kind of parlay, as they call it in America, treble as they call them here, and I would have a look at the Jags. The Jacksonville Jaguars are +8.5 again in a divisional game at away to the Houston Texans. Texans lost by a last second field goal in the mad game against the Saints this on Monday as well. That was, they're going to be good this year. I think they are. I think they'll probably still win this game. I just think that the Jags are full of talent. They hung with the Chiefs. They lost their quarterback really early in that game. The guy who came in actually did pretty well, a rookie. Their defense was a bit of a joke. They got one of their main guys kicked out of the game for literally just completely losing the head for like 15 minutes. It was insane. And a lot of things went wrong for them. Yet they kind of stayed alive and stayed kind of in contact. Leonard Fournette running back looks good again. I think the Jags could surprise a few people this year. I think they could do it in this game. They won't want to go 0-2 either. So I think they'll hang in there at least. And 8.5 is a pretty decent handicap for a team that are that good. You know, they had a poor year last year, but they're a talented group.
Buffalo Bill check before we go.
Yeah.
My beloved Buffalo Bills. Incredible comeback at the death last week to win.
They did.
They're in a local derby this weekend against the New York Giants.
New York derby.
And it's 5-6 for the Bills to win.
Yeah.
Never mind spreads, just a straight up win. I like that.
Okay.
I know nothing, but I like that.
I like it too. I actually had the Bills in this pick. You can see them there written out and scribbled out up above the Chiefs.
They're -1 in the spread. Why have you decided not to put them in?
Honestly, because the Buffalo Bills haven't done anything yet to make me want to put money on them.
Oh, but the Giants are crap.
On the road with a minus in the handicap. I just don't trust them yet. I think they will win it. I think they'll beat it. If you were asked me to pick out of that, I would go for them. And I'm actually quite excited by them. I think they've got a lot going on.
Yeah, you've got the Giants they've got Eli Manning, who is the much beleaguered, the most beleaguered quarterback.
The word beleaguered was probably invented for poor old Eli.
Exactly, and their best player is actually playing for the Cleveland Browns. So look at
Saquon Barkley, though. They've got probably the best running back in the game.
Time will tell. I'm off now. I'm not passing any remarks to the All-Ireland final. Forget about all the stuff we talked about, the box and the football. I'm just purely going to watch old Buffalo Bills videos from their heyday. When was their heyday?
When they lost 4 Super Bowls in a row in the early 90s.
Oh, that sounds exactly like my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Everybody, thank you very much for listening. As we mentioned, if you're having any bets this weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly and visit dunlewy.net for more information. If this is your first time listening and you haven't subscribed yet, be sure to subscribe. You can find us on all good podcast apps. Just search The Build Up on Ball Study, or indeed Ball Study Podcast, because with that feed you'll be able to get all the different podcasts we have throughout the week. And we've got plenty throughout the week. Still to come this week, we have the three-man weave on Friday, where we will be previewing the All-Ireland Football Final replay. But that's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening. And until we speak again, mind yourself.